Radio Prague News.
The government has earmarked funding aimed at increasing places for medical students. The biggest contract in the modern history of the Czech Army won't be awarded on the basis of a public tender process. And IKEA is opening a shop on Prague's Wenceslas Square. The Czech government has earmarked 6.8 billion crowns to try to ensure the country doesn't lack doctors in the future. That figure should ensure that the intake of medicine students at the country's teaching hospitals increases by 15%. A third of all doctors in the Czech Republic will be over the age of 60 by 2020. And the current number of medicine graduates is insufficient to replace the medics who will be retiring in the coming years. The new funding will be spread over an 11-year period. It's in part intended to boost pay for doctors at teaching hospitals to deter their departure to more lucrative areas of medicine. The biggest contract in the modern history of the Czech Army won't be awarded on the basis of a public tender process, Czech TV reported. The Ministry of Defence intends to directly address potential suppliers of over 200 mechanised infantry combat vehicles, the station said. The contract should come in at a cost of 53 billion crowns. An army spokesperson said there were few suppliers of such hardware and that it would consider offers from four producers that met its requirements. Military chiefs want the vehicles to be supplied by the year 2020. Home goods store IKEA is planning to open an outlet on Prague's Wenceslas Square in just over 2 weeks' time. The 800-square-metre shop will focus on living rooms. The new furniture store will be located in a former bank building near the bottom of the capital's main thoroughfare. Its opening reflects a new IKEA strategy that the Swedish company is planning to implement in a number of countries. Plans have been unveiled for this year's edition of Prague's Signal Festival of Light. The 2018 Signal will take place in the capital from the 11th to the 14th of November. And organisers say that for the first time it will have a common theme, the centenary of the foundation of Czechoslovakia. This will be reflected in the involvement of an unusually high number of Czech artists. The Prague district of Karlín will for the first time feature in this year's edition of the festival, which comprises light installations and video mapping shows. Around 500,000 people are expected to attend. Markéta Vondroušová has been knocked out in the fourth round of the US Open in New York. The 19-year-old Czech took the first set against Lesya Tsurenko of Ukraine, but eventually lost 7-6, 5-7, 2-6. That result means that the only Czech singles player remaining at Flushing Meadows is Karolina Plíšková. She will face America's Serena Williams for a place in the semi-finals. The weather forecast: it should be partly overcast in the Czech Republic on Wednesday, with temperatures of up to 23 degrees Celsius. Thursday should see similar weather, but rain is forecast for the remainder of the week. My name is Ian Willoughby, and that is the end of the news.
You're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, with me, Brian Kennedy. Coming up in today's program, residents of a historic district in central Prague are fighting to rein in Airbnb-type services. A major exhibition on totalitarianism is opening under the spot of the demolished Stalin Monument in Prague. And a bit later, we visit some vibrant, historically Czech communities in Oklahoma. All that is coming up shortly, so please do stay with us. Prague is among the most popular tourist destinations in Europe. However, though visitor numbers are rising, the occupancy rate of the city's hotels is falling. According to the Czech Association of Hotels and Restaurants, shared accommodation platforms, such as Airbnb, are mainly to blame. Ruth Frankova has more.
In recent years, Prague has become one of the most popular destinations for Airbnb travellers. Airbnb's share of overnight stays in the Czech capital reached 14.7% last year, an increase by 4.7% from 2016. With a total number of 1.8 million overnight stays, Prague came out ahead of such cities as London, Amsterdam, or Berlin in this regard. One of the areas where most flats are rented out is the city centre, Prague 1. Now, councillors in the district have launched a petition calling for tougher regulation of shared accommodation services such as Airbnb. The initiators of the campaign say the sharing of private homes has turned into a regular business. However, unlike hotels and other accommodation facilities, it is not subject to strict regulation. There are currently around 3,500 to 5,000 apartments rented via shared accommodation services in Prague 1 alone. Prague 1 local councillors complain that noise moves from the streets into apartment buildings, with many tourists having parties indoors, which is of course a problem for the regular tenants. They also say there are many buildings where there are only one or two original tenants left, which ultimately leads to the depopulation of the whole district. The Czech Republic's tax collection agency has recently accessed and compiled data on people renting out property through Airbnb and started looking into whether they are meeting their obligations. Apart from back payments, the tax authority also plans to impose penalties of up to 40%. Meanwhile, Prague municipality can also charge Airbnb hosts a penalty of up to 500,000 crowns for failing to register for local taxes. But Prague 1 local councillors say financial regulation is just one part of the problem. They are calling on the city of Prague and other state authorities to look into the ways other cities and countries are dealing with the problem. The initiators of the campaign would like apartment owners to have more say when it comes to deciding about their buildings, as is already common in many other countries. The mayor of Prague 1, Oldřich Lomecký, agrees that stricter regulation is necessary, but he also points out that it has to respect private ownership. One of the measures he favours is a limit on the sharing of private homes to 60 days.
Ruth Frankova reporting. Now, starting in October, the area around Prague's metronome will house a large exhibition detailing the key moments in Czech totalitarian history. The project, which was instigated by a joint effort of the Prague City Hall and a grouping of historical institutes, seeks to finally unlock the previously closed network of spaces underneath what used to be Stalin's giant statue. Yet questions remain about how the spaces are to be used in the long term. Tom McEnroe reports.
The top of Prague's Letna Hill used to be the site of what was the Czechoslovak Communist Party's most ambitious memorial construction program, a 50-metre-high marble statue of the Soviet dictator Joseph Stalin. While most of the capital's inhabitants are easily able to point out where the statue used to stand, fewer are aware that it was accompanied by a large museum built into the hill directly below. The demolition of the memorial in 1962 left the museum's spaces in poor condition and sealed off to the public. This is to change in October, when the reconstructed spaces will house the centre of a large-scale exhibition reflecting key moments in Czechoslovak totalitarian history. Mikuláš Kroupa, the director of a Czech history-focused NGO called Post Bellum, was one of the initiators of the project.
This is a massive underground space, probably the largest in the whole of Prague. It's about the size of a football field, containing rows of pillars and 5-metre-high ceilings. By using new technologies such as video mapping and sound installations, we want to use it to make visitors become witnesses to key moments in Czech 20th century history.
In order to make the neglected structure accessible, an 11 million crown reconstruction, funded by willing members of the public and City Hall, was initiated in 2017. The budget was also spent on building other installations of the exhibition around the Letna area.
The most visible installation will be a 5-metre-high and 50-metre-long wall replica of the Berlin Wall, a symbol of totalitarian rule. Built across the horizon of Letna Hill, it will be easily visible by anyone living in or visiting the capital.
For now, it remains unclear whether the exhibition will last beyond Christmas, by when the agreement between Post Bellum and the City Hall runs out. Kropa fears ongoing speculation among City Hall representatives, some of whom believe the underground spaces should be further converted after the exhibition ends. Prominent Czech architecture historian Zdeněk Lukáš is certain that cancelling the museum is unnecessary.
If the city demands it, then of course something else can be there. For example, an aquarium or an exhibit gallery, of which there are more than enough in Prague already. I believe there is no need to make any great interventions in this area, but rather to use the atmosphere that is already there.
Whether Kropa gets his way and the spaces end up becoming a long-term museum of totalitarianism or not is likely to remain unclear until later this year, when the Prague City Hall elections will take place.
Tom McEnroe reporting. Just a reminder that you're listening to Radio Prague, the international service of Czech radio, where it's now time for our main feature. The United States Census Bureau estimates that there are 1.5 million Americans of Czech ancestry and about 300,000 more who declare Czechoslovak ancestry. Although few still speak the language of their forefathers, they do still keep their traditions alive. Vít Pohanka visited some of the Czech communities in Oklahoma.
To this day, you can hear Czech polka in the windy prairies of American Midwest. The Czech and Moravian farmers started settling in states like Nebraska and Texas in the second half of the 19th century. When the federal government in Washington, D.C. decided to open the Indian lands at the end of the 1880s, the Czechs, like immigrants of many other nationalities, made their way to Oklahoma, and they took part in what was called Land Run or Land Rush. Michael Dean of the Oklahoma Historical Society.
In the central part of the Oklahoma Territory were 3.5 million acres of land that had not been settled, that was owned by the government. And originally that was supposed to have been land that Indian tribes would be placed upon. By 1889, that land had not been opened, had not been settled by Indians. The government was keeping people out of there, and there was a tremendous move to open it up for settlement. This was all going to be productive farmland. There were going to be cities here, and so the government decided there were tens of thousands of people who wanted to settle in here. How do you do that? Somebody came up, actually it was somebody in the president's office in Washington, came up with the idea of the land will be settled by land run. And so there was an army post at Fort Reno, and the commander of that army detachment then simply was sent this one-word statement. How's the land going to be opened? It's going to be opened by land run. And then it was up to him to decide the hour and the day and the month that that would happen.
You can actually find a very vivid depiction of such a land run in the film Far and Away, starring Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman. Historian Michael Dean confirms that it was indeed a very dramatic scene.
Guns sounded, the cannons were fired, and they came rushing into this area on horseback, in buggies, on carriages, and by foot, and they tried to stake out what they thought would be the best lands that then would be theirs. So they'd stake out a parcel of land, and then they'd go to the federal land office to claim their deed, to get the deed that gave them title, that gave them ownership of that claim that they had staked out. And so that was how that took place. It had never been done in history anywhere, certainly not in the United States, nowhere else on the face of the planet.
No one knows for sure how many Czech families got their farms in the land runs of 1889 and 1891. But they certainly formed one of the major and visible ethnic groups of settlers in Oklahoma.
They were very strong politically. They were very strong with their religion. They brought in a work ethic that is still there. So they came here looking for one thing, for opportunity. Opportunity that they didn't have where they were coming from. Opportunity to own land. Opportunity to be successful in businesses. Opportunity to find good homes for their families and homes where they would be welcomed, homes where they would make a lasting influence. And that all has proved to be true.
Concludes Michael Dean from the Oklahoma Historical Society.
What's your name?
Okay, my name is Marianne Shefchik Pritchett now.
In the city of Prague, some 50 miles east of Oklahoma City, I meet Marianne Shefchik Pritchett, a typical representative of the Czech community. She does not speak the language of her ancestors, but she is still very active in the Historical Museum of Prague. Yes, Prague, even though the spelling is the same as in Prague. For when they founded the city, the Czechs wanted to commemorate the capital of their old country, but at the same time they wanted to distinguish their own city, so they changed the pronunciation.
In 1891, the Second Fox Indian Reservation was opened up for settlement. If you came and settled like on 160 acres of land and stayed here and improved it, you could own it free of charge. And they were farmers and craftsmen, and they settled here and started farming, and they mostly settled in groups, and that way they socialized together and kept their Czech customs together, and that's how they settled the town. And then the town was really incorporated in 1902 as a city.
Even now in the 21st century, the Czechs keep alive their ancestors' traditions and culture.
Oh, it's very important. We have a Czech festival once a year, the first Saturday in May, and people run for queen, and we bake kolaches and have a parade and do the Czech dances like the beseda and Flying Dutchman and all of these polkas and waltzes, have a street dance. And so we very much try to preserve our heritage, so that the young people know where they came from, the heritage of where they came.
Now, Prague might bear the name similar to the old Czech capital, but the real center of the Czech community is actually the city of Yukon, part of the Oklahoma City metropolitan area. Here you can find the Czech Hall, where volunteers are baking koláče. And showing me around is Mrs. Agnes Tersch.
This is the eggs and the salt and sugar for the next batch. This is my yeast and my flour. And then I put in this big mixer, I put the eggs and the sugar in and put it on high to beat it, to get it all smoothed out. And then I add the milk that's on the stove in there and start mixing it. Then add the flour till it's the right texture, till it's not sticky anymore.
The Czechs of Yukon bake thousands and thousands of koláče. They sell them during their Czech festival at the beginning of October. Koláče sell very well, and the Czech community uses the profit to pay the electricity bills and other costs related to running the Czech Hall. For them, it is a very important center of communal life where they can have their Czech dances and other events. Like in Prague, traditions are extremely important, says Milo Šedek, originally Miloš Žídek, whose family has been living here for some 130 years.
There was four sons, a mother and a father, and the father got run over on the railroad track right before they left to come. And the four brothers, there were Kobas, came over here and settled. And they came down from Ohio and Nebraska, and they were all farmers. This was good farmland in Oklahoma. So they made the run and settled, and each one of them got a quarter section of land from the government, and mainly were wheat farmers. And I grew up south of Yukon here and farmed on my grandmother's and uncle's farms. I was in the banking business and worked for an electrical service company. And I retired 3 years ago, so now I'm baking kolaches for fun. And I have a polka band, too. Our band is called the Bohemian Knights, and we play Czech music, polka music, waltzes, all the favorites.
What sort of crowd did you have normally?
Oh, we usually have 60 to 100 people, and during Czech Day in October, we usually have about 500 to 600 dancers, and all the kids dress up. They have the Queen contest, and they all have a parade, a grand parade, and they come in with their costumes, and it's really great.
Sums it up, Milo Shedek, or Zidek. And you would find thousands of other people who could tell you a similar story about the life of Czechs in Oklahoma.
That report by Vít Bohanka first aired in January. And that edition of Panorama brings us to the end of our program on Radio Prague. If you have any comments about today's content, please do get in touch. Our email address is english@radio.cz. You can also contact us on Facebook or via Twitter. We'll be glad to hear from you. I'm Brian Kennedy. Thanks for listening, and goodbye for now.